Welcome to episode number 36 of Camping Out, a podcast about interesting people, stories, adventures, and their impact in the world, usually through the lens of outdoor adventure. I am Dan Camp, and at the campfire tonight, we have the man behind the brand Badfish, an all-around river lover, Mike Harvey. Mike, along with some close friends, saw a niche in the world of whitewater and found a way to bring river people to their feet, literally, while changing the game for paddleboarding and river surfing. Mike has also spent nearly two decades creating whitewater parks across the United States, creating safe spaces for communities to recreate in and around the river while never leaving their urban environment. As a businessman, a husband, and a father of two grown-up kids, Mike has a lot to share, a lot of wisdom pouring out of this conversation, guys. So go ahead, pour yourself your preferred fireside beverage, pull your chair up to the fire, and let's listen to Mike Harvey. Welcome to Camping Out. I am Dan Camp, and this evening I am sitting around the campfire with a true blue whitewater connoisseur and co-owner of the company Badfish. Badfish is revolutionizing how people enjoy river recreation from the tops of stand-up paddle boards and river surfboards. Mike has been a river person for most of his life. He's kayaked across the world and engineered whitewater parks on rivers all over North America, including in his current hometown of Salida, Colorado. A man of many talents and a true lover of wild spaces where rivers flow, Mike Harvey, welcome to Camping Out.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
I've got a rule, and I added this rule to my life. It might even be like a guiding principle of my life now, ever since I met Natalie Zollinger and Brittany Parker, that anything that they do, any person they interact with, or you know, any project they put their energy behind, I want to follow that and like learn from it. So I figured, like, who better to talk to than Mike Harvey? And you guys have a really cool relationship. I almost feel biased like coming into this conversation because I've gotten to study you a little bit and like listen to your podcast with them. And I follow you on social media and things like that. So I got like my guns loaded coming into the conversation.
All right, man. Well, I'm ready. And I'll take BP and Natalie as references for sure.
Yeah. Not bad ones to have. Yeah. Before we kick things off here, I like to start by asking, what is your preferred fireside beverage?
Well, I'm pretty old and boring now, so I mostly just drink water, but I'll have a couple of beers, but never really more than one or two. Yeah. Anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything in moderation.
Like, I'm all about, at this point in my life, I'm all about like trying to, still do the things I love at the level I want to do them, you know, into the middle part of my life here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Drinking doesn't help much.
Water is a good conduit into extending the good years, I should say.
That's right. Yeah.
I am opting to drink a ranch water, which is the top seltzer out there right now. This one in particular bounced around the bottom of my raft for 3 days in the North Fork up in Glacier a couple weekends ago. So it's been hanging out in the fridge.
Yeah. River trip beer.
They always get like the special shine, like a polish, like they were bouncing off things. So
yeah, I always love when I show up at a party and you open the cooler and you're like, this was leftovers.
Yeah, you can always tell.
Yeah, nice.
Cool, man. Well, I really appreciate you hopping on here and spending some time with me tonight. I want to start with who are you? Where are you from? How'd you get involved? And something that I thought was kind of neat is I was listening to your interview on the Eddie Out podcast with Natalie and Brittany. And if you're listening to this podcast, go and hop onto that one after this. But you're talking about how you came from the Midwest and you grew up doing like the Midwest activities, the Flatlander stuff, hunting, fishing, camping, that sort of thing. That's my background too. So I thought that was kind of an interesting through line. But tell us about who you are, how you got involved with outdoor recreation and where you are now.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. My family was mostly into hunting and fishing, fly fishing, did a lot of fly fishing, you know, did some skiing in Western New York and Pennsylvania and stuff. And so I was definitely into skiing and snow sports. But most of my, both of my parents, siblings were from Colorado. And so I spent, as a kid, I would go sleep on my aunt and uncle's couches and ski in Colorado. And so I remember coming home to Cleveland in the summertime when I was like 9 or 10 years old from my uncle's house and just crying because I already understood that, you know, that I liked that place better. So actually 6 days after I graduated high school in 1993, I, um, I drove to the Arkansas River Valley where I live now to take a job as a raft guide, which I didn't know anything about. I actually had a teacher in high school that recommended I come out for the summer and train as a raft guide. And I was like, sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
And so I did it and I just fell in love, you know. It was like instant. It was instant. I learned to kayak right away. And I fell in love with the people, you know, and the fact that there was this whole lifestyle I'd never been exposed to, where these, you know, some of them skied in the winter and boated in the summer, and, you know, they lived in like vans and stuff, you know. This is pre-sprinter van era. Right. Like, pretty revolutionary at that time, you know, and right. Like, and, you know, people went to Costa Rica and went kayaking and all this stuff. And I just fell in love with it and kind of found my tribe for sure. And it's just, I just wanted to do that, you know, and whitewater kayaking in particular was kind of, I think I was really ripe to be passionate about something like that. You know, I loved mm-hmm. the outdoors, but I was kind of that typical angsty teenager, that needed some direction, and yeah. whitewater kayaking just gave me so much motivation to be healthy, motivation to just go have adventures, you know, new community. It just really changed my life. And so I sort of like, I guess I'm one of those people that, can make a decision like that at 18 or whatever, but I was like, yeah. you know, I'm just going to do this. Like, I'm going to do something with this my whole life. And, you know, right. and that's sort of been the North Star for me ever since.
Yeah. That's so cool. The story of the teacher, that pushes you to go be a whitewater guide. I think everybody has, you know, one or two people or events in their lifetime that I call like a hinge moment in your life, where you kind of hinged on that one thing. And you had this person that pushed you. Was it a science teacher?
No, he was like an English teacher, but I went to a boarding school, and what he really was he was my head disciplinarian. So like I lived in a dorm in high school, and I lived in what they called the discipline suite. That was because my room had a door into his apartment, and he was like at the time mid-30s, kind of younger guy. And he could just get into my room anytime he needed to make sure I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. But we close relationship. He took me backpacking in the Smoky Mountains, and, you know, and he cared about me in a way that, you know, a teenager, me in particular, I've always responded really well to firmer leadership, you know, like that. Yeah. So good, you know, and he just knew, I think he knew, I mean, obviously didn't know that I would take to it so greatly, but he knew it was an opportunity for me that, and, I still thank him, you know. I talk to him, you know, a couple times a year, and I always say thank you. Because, you know, and it's been a good lesson for me that if I could offer an opportunity to young people, I mean, certainly my kids, my son is the exact age now that I was then. But, you know, also just other young people, if I can help, you know, give people opportunities to, you know, see if this type of lifestyle and these types of activities are for them, that, you know, how powerful just offering that opportunity can be, you know. And then obviously I did what I did with it, but that opportunity really started it. Yeah.
And it's such a different lifestyle. And that's why I was super drawn to the story of the teacher telling you, because, you know, most teachers are telling you to go to college and keep moving through this scholastic, whatever, get a career and do that forever. And I think we're seeing it more now, which is fantastic. People doing it and making careers of it. Or if you don't really believe in careers, doing it for a long time. And yeah, so it's cool to see. I mean, you're like the front runner of that era. I mean, you're kind of kicked off. You're a trendsetter.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I feel lucky. I feel fortunate for sure. Yeah.
And what was it about kayaking, do you think, that captivated you? Do you think it was the high risk, high reward portion of it that you kind of craved? Or what do you think it was that whitewater brought out in you as a young man that kind of put you on the path you are?
Yeah. I mean, well, first and foremost is water, you know, and I think like, I don't think I understood it until I, you know, really became a whitewater paddler, but then I could look back and be like, oh yeah, why did I always love, like, you know, I'd go fishing with my grandmother on a creek. And if there was like a deep hole, you know, on these small creeks in Pennsylvania and stuff that we'd fish, I'd like strip down and swim, you know, and got on the bottom. And I realized, you know, later that, oh yeah, I've always just loved being in water. But I think, you know, too, it's, I don't know. I guess for me, I needed something to, you know, I think all young people need something to, people search for an identity, right? So, and you do it in a lot of times you do it in all kinds of unhealthy ways, right. You know, and so for me, this gave me something where like, yeah, this is my community. This is my activity. I could get good at this, you know, and there's an endless amount of challenge to it, you know, and I loved how, you know, very quickly I got into other types of paddling, you know, so I wanted to paddle other types of boats and I wanted to do other rivers. And, you know, I love, and I still do to this day, almost 30 years later, you know, I love the fact that I can still find ways to suck at it, you know, and then progress again, you know, and that's what I like the best out of all these activities is that feeling of like, oh no, I can probably figure this out, but I haven't yet. And then I make those little improvements and, you know, I don't know. So it's just all that, but I think it's the lifestyle, the people and the ability that to just show me a path that I could see maybe at that age that would be really truly rewarding for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that path, I mean, you've paddled all over the world, pretty much some of the most world-class rivers out there. Do you have a place that, you still think about in those early days where you were paddling that, really kind of rooted you into the sport? And, you know, there's always something magical about a new river and seeing it for the first time and feeling those sensations and the people that you get to experience it. Like you said, the community, do you have those spots that early on in your whitewater paddling career that really rooted you?
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously the Arkansas River is my home river, still is, you know, I still love it. You know, and honestly, like I'm not that much of a, I'm basically a local paddler, you know, I paddle, my whole life has been since that point, I've had a lot of things going on. I had kids, you know, at a relatively young age, at least in the today's, you know, right. Today's standard, you know, you know, still in my 20s. And so, you know, I needed paddling that's out my back door, you know, and I need to be able to do it. I'm not happy with just like a couple of big trips a year. You know, I need like 4 days a week and I need to, you know, so for me, I really value that. I value access. I value, you know, even though, you know, people might be like, well, how could you possibly run Pine Creek in the numbers, you know, for the 10,000th time? But well, it's right. Like, I love it. You know, it's my friend, it's right there. And it's, and I, you know, and so, but honestly, like, as far as the first thing that really, the first new river that really changed paddling for me, it was going down to Honduras in the 90s, with my eventual business partner, Zach Hughes. He was already down there helping run this raft company down there. And it was just, you know, it was cool. It was the first descents. It was big, you know, dramatic rivers with giant California style granite and waterfalls and slides. And I learned so much and I paddled with, you know, a bunch of people that went on to be, you know, very accomplished paddlers, but we were all kind of young at the time. And we just did a bunch of like dangerous, dumb stuff that, you know,
stuff you only get away with in your 20s.
Yeah. When you don't know any better, you can somehow be immune to the consequences, you know, that sort of thing. But, I mean, but the Arkansas, you know, I'll just go ahead and have my ashes dumped in the Arkansas someday.
Yeah. You know? I was going to say it's in your blood at this point.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Amazing. So you get to go out, you get to paddle. You guys bought a rafting company. You're 21 years old. What was that adventure like? Was it just kind of on a whim or you decided like, let's just do this thing? Or do you have like a business plan?
No, God, no. Yeah, you could say it was on a whim. Yeah, it was like basically the company that myself and two other guys were working for was kind of failing. Yeah. Right before our eyes. I mean, we witnessed the collapse of this business, you know?
Yeah.
And we were like, geez, we could probably do this. I mean, we can't be any worse than this guy. Right. You know? And so, so there just happened to be like this little permit for sale and you know, a handful of boats and a bus. And like, I mean, it wasn't very much money, you know, we scraped together. I don't even remember the amount, but we scraped together the money to do it. And then we just started this company and it was just like, you know, we had enough trips to keep the three of us busy was pretty much it for, you know, for about three seasons. And we didn't make any money in it, but man, I mean, but it was a great learning experience. I was in college and, And it was fun to you know, have some real world thing to,
yeah,
to be concerned about, you know, and,
right.
But, it was janky as could be. I mean, we were like, you know, I mean, we were good guys. We weren't putting people's lives in danger, but it was like, you know, we didn't have an office. So we'd wash the wetsuits in the car wash, you know,
and, oh my
like,
gosh.
We'd meet our, yeah. We meet the customers at the put in, you know, cause we didn't have a place to, we had no commercial property. So we just meet them at the put in, you know, and. But no, it was great. I mean, you look back on it, you're like, oh, that was an awesome experience. But, you know, it was definitely not. Yeah, I definitely didn't retire when we sold that thing.
right. Yeah. And then you kind of got into the world of Whitewater Park Building, which is extremely amazing. I think that people are seeing them more as people are, as first of all, they're getting built in new places. Yeah. Like, for example, Missoula with Brennan's Wave. That's such an amazing focal point of that downtown area. I love it. And it's like that with most whitewater parks, where my girlfriend actually grew up, Wausau, Wisconsin has one through the middle of town. Great little park in the middle of the Midwest.
It is. And one of the earliest whitewater parks in the country, you know, and is in Wausau there. Yeah. That's a neat course. Yeah.
So how did you get involved with that? How does a person, jump into that world?
Yeah. I mean, you probably couldn't recreate this exact playbook because it's come a long way since then. But for me, what it was I, you know, we settled down, my wife and I settled down in Salida and full time. This is in the late 90s. And, you know, in Salida, we have the oldest whitewater festival in North America, FIBARC. It's been going on since 1949. And so actually at some point in the 60s, paddlers started messing around with rocks in the river in downtown Salida. Salida has a real impacted river corridor. We had a hundred acre rail yard on river left and then the town on river right. And so what you had was through the peak years of like the railroad and the industry in Salida, you just had the river straightened and channelized and a bunch of, you know, waste concrete and stuff dumped on the banks and just turned it into a flood control channel, you know, kind of the old school way of dealing with the river where it's like, nah, this thing's a nuisance. Let's get it past town as quickly as possible.
Out of sight, out of mind, like get rid of it.
Exactly. Put it out your back door and, you know, dump your sewage in there.
Right.
And so FIBARC, you know, Salida is one of the earliest places where Europeans who were running whitewater in kayaks and then starting to have whitewater competition, you know, that where it sort of took hold in the US was Salida was one of those places. And so eventually some paddlers were like, well, heck, if we're going to have a slalom race here in town, it might be nice to have some eddies and some stuff. So they started, you know, I found pictures of, you know, black and white photos of guys in backhoes, you know, piling up rocks, trying to make eddies in like the 60s.
That's crazy.
And so, yeah, it was crazy. And so there's a history of it. And by the time the late 90s came, you know, there'd been a couple semi-formal efforts to move things around and create a slalom course. And but really what happened was in 96, the town of Golden, Colorado built a whitewater park. And it was the first really public whitewater course in the U.S. besides, you know, there was Wausau. There's a few others that were really centered around slalom kayaking. But what made Golden different was it was really in the community. It was a community park along this river. It had, you know, it had all the aspects of a park with, you know, access and bathrooms and parking and trails and all that stuff.
Right.
But it was for whitewater paddling. And you know, and this is the era where play boating and rodeo kayaking was just sort of starting to take off. And we had some competitions there. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. I was like, this is the future, you know, I mean, and then I happened to be moving to Salida and trying to blend this, like, you know, marriage and being married and, you know, domestic life with wanting to be a, really like my soul's just a dirt bag paddler. You know? So like, I gotta be able to go kayaking right in town or this is never going to work. I can't take off with my wife for 2 weeks at a time.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm going to build a whitewater park in Salida. And so I just kind of got after it, that project. And met some people, the most important of whom was a guy by the name of Gary Lacey, who's an engineer who designed the Golden Park and was sort of, I mean, he's really the godfather of whitewater parks in North America. And Gary just jumped in and kind of helped me with a slider project initially. And we in the spring of 2000, we put together a little project to build one drop, one play wave, mm-hmm. one hydraulic. And we did, we built it. And after that, Gary was like, "Hey, would you like to do more of this?" His business was starting to grow. And I was like, "Sure, you know, I mean, this is cool, you know?" And so I started working with him, and I kind of started an apprenticeship, basically learning this. So I don't have an engineering background. I basically learned sort of the old way, where I worked under an engineer doing this one particular type of work. And it's just come a long way. You know, I made a lot of mistakes, was primarily my learning technique, you know,
right.
I think probably almost everyone's,
right.
you know? And so, you know, I've had an opportunity to continue to do it and still working on some projects right now. And I love the community aspect of it. I love seeing the impact they have on a community. And I do love the nerdy, like, you know, how do we make a good feature? And that's changed a lot, right? I mean,
right.
The late 90s, early 2000s, it was all about a crumbly, steeper hydraulic that was appropriate for kayaking. And now everybody wants a wave, which is much, much harder to actually make happen.
Right.
But it has a much broader appeal. Something that's more like a wave has a much broader appeal to a broader cross-section of the community. So that's what we're doing a lot now. But the core of the Whitewater Park will always be just reconnecting a community with a river. That's what they essentially are. Tons of people use Whitewater Parks who don't care at all about surfing or paddling, right. or, you know, they just want to walk along the river and sit on the banks. And they, you know, and so many rivers and communities are cut off. They're behind fences. They're, you know, they're just impacted. I mean, for all the reasons we talked about a minute ago with Salida, it's the same everywhere. So Whitewater Parks are a great way to open a river corridor up to a community and offer access to the community to the river. And so here in Salida now, you know, 20 whatever years later, what you see is kids swimming, kids on boogie boards, you know, parents hanging out in the shade, drinking coffee, watching their kids play. You know, the kids grow up in the water here now, where 20 years ago, I was told by everybody when I kind of went around towns trying to pitch this idea of a Whitewater Park, that we were going to drown kids. You know, that was really right. what people thought. They were like, "Well, no, the river's dangerous. Like, why would you want to encourage access?" You know, now you look and every kid is running around town on the bike with a PFD hanging off their shoulder. You know, it's like, so it's cool. That's my favorite part for sure. You know,
yeah. Amazing. That's amazing. I think like the whole circle of life, human evolution, the whole history of humanity revolves around water. And that's why I think we have like this really, as human beings, we have this really innate draw to water, to be around it, to splash, to recreate in it. I think like since the dawning of man, that has been something that was like built into us to go enjoy. It brings life. You know, we created these agrarian utopias where you could only have it if you had water.
Right,
So I think that, you know, reconnecting with that and getting communities reconnected with like the love that persists in a river rather than, like you said, I think for a long time, it's almost been villainized. It's like sharks or spiders, you know,
totally.
People are scared of it. People don't totally understand it, but I guess I see it as a place where people can go and watch people having tons of fun, recreating responsibly and swim, bring the dog out, drink your coffee and just hear like just the sound of that water
is
therapeutic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I was sort of like, well, you know, one technique could be to try to build a wall and keep your kids away from the river. And then maybe they won't drown if they don't figure out how to get over the wall.
Right.
Or you could purposely open up the river and encourage people to get down there and offer opportunities to learn how to use the river in a way that isn't dangerous, you know, and to understand what the difference between high water and flood stages is and low water and warmer months. And you know, and obviously the river's risky. I mean, everything is, right. But I think that, you know, the benefits have just, by orders of magnitude, outweighed whatever potential hazards there have been over the years. And since the viewers or the listeners can't see my face right now, but you can, you know, that like on Sunday, I ran into a boulder with my face in the Whitewater Park. So, you know, yeah, you know, it's not impossible to get hurt right. down there, but yeah.
The fun thing about being on the water is that we're all just in between swims enjoying ourselves.
That's right. Yeah.
For you, what does an ideal whitewater park look like?
Yeah, I mean, so the most important thing, in my opinion, starts with the connection to the top of the bank, right? So how are you getting people down to the river? And then how are you doing it in a way where that promotes access for as many people as possible? And it's attractive. It's, you know, that like people, if people are going to walk down to the edge of a river, what are they walking down to? Is there a little beach? Is there an eddy? Is there, we know the things as river runners and people that love rivers. We know what attracts people to rivers, you know? And so, where are you bringing them down to the water? And then also, can you take other areas and green it up and add vegetation back in? And can you have this cool mix of hardened access for human beings, but then also vegetation and greenery so that you get some of those great functions of a river in terms of growing bugs for fish and, and shade. And so you have cover and all that sort of thing that a natural river system, a really healthy river system has. And then of course, hydraulic jumps, which is like the engineering term for a standing wave or a stationary wave or a whitewater feature, then those become the focal point of all the activity and the fun. And so that's what, those structures, sort of everything radiates out from them. But if you don't make the connection to the bank and for pedestrians, and then you sort of miss it. You know, if you just have a wave hiding in the middle of the river, you and I'll go out there, we'll do whatever it takes to get to that wave. But so many people won't, and don't understand it and don't get that connection that you just talked about. So for me, it's got to be both, and one's not more important than the other.
Amazing. I love that. I love that view. Do you have some favorite projects that you've worked on over the years? I think a lot of people hear Whitewater Park and they're like, there's no way that's close to me. But the one in San Marco, Texas stands out to me as being like, you're driving through Texas, you're kind of close to Austin and San Antonio. And then you're like, oh, there's like this little hot spot with, I mean, it was like 40 degrees when I visited that one, but the water was so nice and warm.
Yeah, the water's nice, spring fed. Yeah. That was a fun project to build too, because they have incredible Mexican food in that town.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. But that was a cool project I worked on, San Marcos. But of course, Salida and Buena Vista are, my, darn it. Sorry, man. The phone.
You're good.
Okay. Salida and BV are my hometown projects. I love them. I've been able to have my hands on them multiple times over 20 years. In fact, we're going to do a new phase in each park this coming year in 2022.
Awesome.
So it's cool. I feel really fortunate that I've been able to stay involved in those projects and I can live them, and sort of like my kids grew up in the river here. And so I can have ideas and go to the city government and suggest ideas and just be a part of it, versus some of the projects where I come in, work as a consultant, and then leave, and I'm not really a part of the project in the future. But that being said, Dayton, Ohio is a place I spent a lot of time, and we did a project in downtown Dayton, which really has been cool to see how it's gone. And I made a lot of good friends there and kind of loved being there while I was doing it. It was close to 10 years of work. And it took out of extremely dangerous low head dam and replaced it. So you went from having this thing that was a hazard, just a classic drowning machine, low head dam, to a real community asset, and so seeing now that there's, my buddy Shannon's got a brand called Surf Dayton, I wear the t-shirt all the time. People are like, what? Is that supposed to say Surf Daytona? You're like, no, Surf Dayton,
Yeah.
So it's cool. That sort of thing I love. And we actually just broke ground on a project in Franklin, New Hampshire.
Wow.
So that'll be the first one I've ever done in New England. It's actually the first whitewater park in New England.
Awesome.
So I'm excited about that. But Salida will always be my home park, even when I'm smacking my face on boulders in there.
You got to shed some blood in the river you love every now and then.
That's right. Yeah.
My buddy Austin, that I used to guide with, he is from Ohio, and he found that Dayton park when he was back in between seasons, and it kept him fresh for his kayaking, in the summer. So that's pretty awesome.
Right on.
So where does Badfish come into the equation here? How did you and Zach go about getting this thing started?
Yeah, well, Zach and I have been kayaking buddies for a long time. Actually, I met him that very first summer that I was out here on the Arkansas. Cool. So we've known each other close to 30 years. And he was also a really passionate whitewater kayaker in those years in the 90s. We kind of ran around together and did competitions and paddled stuff together. And like I said, went down to Honduras. And he's from San Diego. He grew up surfing. And I built a park in the early 2000s in Pueblo, Colorado, and sort of like unintentionally made this big green wave. And some surfers started surfing it. And somebody told me that there's these guys down there surfing that wave. And so I went down to see it myself. I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, I want to check this out. Went down there with my kayak and it was high water, met these guys that were surfing. And I was like, wow, you know, I bet Zach's got some surfboards in his garage. We should just go try to surf this wave. And I mean, it's not like we didn't invent river surfing, obviously. Like, I knew that it existed. I'd seen it once or twice on a couple of big waves that come in sometimes in Colorado. But it was sort of like a total novelty thing. I was like, I never thought of it as something you could do, you know?
Right.
And so we went down and we surfed that wave and Zach's got a really he's a very creative person. He's got a ton of crazy ideas for, you know, anything he's into, you know? So when we were into kayaking, he was like ripping the outfitting apart and going, well, this could be something better, you know? And why is the boat like this when it should be like that? And we were always end up in these conversations about how something could be better.
Right.
And so we left that very first session and he was like, man, these boards just aren't right for that wave. You know, like, yeah, that was fun. But like, I think you could, if you had a board that was a little bit different, you could not only maybe surf that wave with super high water, but maybe you could surf these smaller features that we're used to as kayakers that are here for more of the summertime when the water's right. lower. So that was like a pretty amazing epiphany that he had. And so he started shaping surfboards in his garage out of Blue Board home insulation. and he just like watched some YouTube videos and was like, yeah. And he made these really thick, fat boards because his first thought was like, these boards don't have enough volume
right.
For river surfing. And so the first board he made, he kind of based it on an old fish shape, what he used to surf in like the 80s in California. But he called it a mutant fish. And then he started calling it a bad fish.
Yeah, mutant fish doesn't quite roll off the tongue as well.
No. And so, yeah, so he did that. And then this all got me thinking about like, well, you know, what could we do to actually purposely create a wave that you could surf, you know? And so I started thinking about it for Whitewater Park design. And then, but the one thing with his boards, his first boards was somebody like me that had no surfing experience. You know, I was a whitewater kayaker, right. skateboarded a ton as a kid and snowboarded and stuff, but surfing's hard. You know, right. and popping up to your feet on a little weird shortboard in a river wave is very hard.
Right.
So I was just failing at it, you know, and I saw him surfing, but I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this, you know, or I wasn't doing it very successfully. And around the same time, my buddy Earl, who owned CKS, Colorado Kayak Supply, he brought the first paddleboard I ever saw back to the Arkansas River Valley. And he was like, you got to check this out. This is so cool. You know, and I saw it and kind of what we were talking about earlier, I was like, oh, cool. Like I could learn to kayak on my feet on this thing.
Yeah.
And kind of what we were talking about earlier, that challenge of trying to do something you know how to do, but in a new way that makes it hard again. Paddleboarding had that immediate appeal to me of just like, well, I literally couldn't pull out of an eddy on one, you know,
so right.
there's a lot to learn here.
Right.
But it clicked for me that maybe if Zach took what he was doing with these little short boards and blended it with a stand-up paddle board that somebody like me could just come right out of the eddy on my feet. And if I was already surfing the wave, then I wouldn't have to mess around with popping up. And, you know, I was comfortable to paddle and I knew what was happening out there. It was just whitewater kayaking on my feet.
Right.
So I was like, hey, would you make me a board that looks like kind of what you're doing, but is big enough to stand on? And we got a couple paddle boards in his little garage and we're looking at him like, you know, about like this, which kind of guessed. And he made me a board. And that same winter I got a grant to build two new features in Salida. So it was like this crazy confluence of events where I was like, okay, we're gonna try to build a couple surf waves. I have this idea how we might be able to do that. And Zach's got this idea for this board that we can maybe surf it on. And so I built the features over the winter and he built the board. And I literally, I went down there the first little bit of water we got in April. And I, the very first time I tried to surf it, I went out on the brand new wave on the brand new board. And I was just like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, yeah, it was just an amazing moment, you know? And I literally, I think I surfed the first time. There's no one down there. I think I surfed for like 15 minutes, you know?
Wow.
Just like blown away.
Yeah.
New perspective. I'm up tall. The water's running under me. It's like a new way of seeing the river because I wasn't sitting in my kayak.
Right.
And I was, you know, I didn't really know how to surf, but I was kind of feeling a little bit that like I could turn it. And yeah, it was so rad. And so I just went back to the bank and I actually like picked up my, this is 2010. Yeah. 2010. I picked up my phone and I called Zach and I was like, dude, like, I think people really want to do this, you know, like this is really fun. And I was like, you know, if you want to do this as a business, like maybe you and I should go into business together and try to do this, which is like a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have any clue what I was in for or what you want to be in for, but we just did. And, so we, you know, we started trying to figure it out and paddleboarding kind of was, you know, growing at the same time. And so we came at it from that river surfing perspective, but right away we saw that people were going to want to run down rivers on them and that they were super versatile, that you could take them with you to wherever you went and go paddling in a way that a kayak isn't quite as versatile, you know? And, so we just went for it. And, I mean, you know, it's been, to say it's been challenging is a slight understatement, but, but it's also been really, really fun and really rewarding. And just, as you said earlier with Brittany and Natalie, like the number of people and communities that it's tied me to and all the connections that I've been able to make through it has just really been almost the coolest part.
For sure. I had the fortunate occurrence to talk to Rita Boychuk too. And she was telling me the story about how she had a terrible swim in a kayak and was like, put all of her stuff in a box, no more whitewater for her. And then she got on a paddleboard and gave it a shot. And she's like, it completely changed my life. I'm back in a kayak. I'm back in a raft. So like that perspective that you mentioned earlier of seeing it from a different angle and like finding your confidence in a different way. That's pretty, I mean, you can't put a price tag on that.
No. And yeah, in a paddleboard, you know, I mean, it has some big advantages and some big disadvantages, you know? And so the big advantages is there's a much shorter learning curve. And so, you know, you can get somebody out on the river right away and they can experience it. And for a lot of people who don't necessarily need to become high level whitewater paddlers, it's awesome because they can go down the river. They have, you know, they can sit down on it. They can stand up, they can see things, they can paddle and it's comfortable. You know, you're not sitting in a slumped position in a dumpy or something. And, you know, exactly. It's comfortable. But of course the disadvantage is you're standing on your feet trying to do things that are pretty hard, you know?
Right.
So like for somebody like Arita or Natalie or Brittany, who've like learned how to be really high level whitewater paddlers on it, you know, I think that's still sort of the minority.
Sure.
But what's so cool about it is it's a very widely appealing vehicle. And for me as a whitewater paddler, like what I like, I mean, I still kayak a ton. I like both, but stand up paddling is, it feels really good, you know? So like if you've been sitting in a kayak for 30 years, standing up is actually quite good for your back and in your hips and stuff. And I love that, you know, class two can be just endlessly interesting on a paddleboard, you know? So yeah, and we've done a lot of self-support trips on it, which I also really enjoy because it's your gears in and off the board really quickly. And yeah, it's comfortable. You can stretch, you know? So, I just like, I'm a paddler. So I just like to paddle things and I don't discriminate really.
Right. Yeah. Hey campers, I want to catch you right here in the middle of this episode to tell you about an amazing service for all you outdoorsy people looking for your next great campsite, campgroundviews.com. Campgroundviews.com is the one-stop shop for planning your next camping trip. Have you ever showed up to a campsite and been a little bit disappointed about maybe the location or just the overall look of the site? I know I have. Campgroundviews.com takes the guesswork out of picking your tent or RV site and allows you to actually virtually tour campgrounds before ever stepping foot at a site. To check out more, go to campgroundviews.com and consider becoming a member. What I think is really cool with Badfish is you guys are, like you said, it's a fairly new sport still, I would say. Like, people are still finding their way into it. And you guys are like at the leading edge of the innovation of the sport. You guys are creating like inflatable boards. And I love the idea of inflatable because you can take them anywhere. But then you can throw them in and like surf on them, which to me, it blows my mind. I know like you put so much air in those things, they're so stiff, but to me, it's just like so incredible. So for you guys, like what's in your brain as you're innovating and you're creating new products? And I think in the last couple of years, you guys are like really like, it's almost, you know, that exponential growth curve of technology from your guys' products. Are you guys talking to the athletes that are using them? Are you guys, you know, just beta testing them? What drives the innovation?
Yeah, I mean, well, because we're paddlers and so we use the stuff, and then our friends use it too. Our team is our friends, you know, and so so the passion for making something better and for trying to try something. Well, one is like innovation requires enough nimbleness that you're not gonna get burned if you screw up, because you will screw up. Like, and we certainly have, you know, we've made some mistakes that, you know. But there's three of us that own the company now. And so we can just decide to do something and then try to do it, you know?
Right.
And if it doesn't work, we got to answer to ourselves, but we don't have to answer to like this big corporate hierarchy or shareholders or people that are going to be angry that you blew X amount of money on something that seems kind of dumb in retrospect.
Right.
You know, so I mean, I think that's, we're fortunate in that way. But then also it is about using it. You know, you got to go paddling and you got to, and then, If we like something, then does somebody else like it? I mean, that's how the whole company started. Was we had this one board, I liked it, Zach liked it, and then we went to our friend Mike Tavares, and who lived down the street, and then he liked it too. And so we were like, oh well, that's cool. That's three people, you know.
Yeah, we're three for three.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, I mean, you know, we get feedback from friends, from customers, and then we just try to see, you know, what would we want? What would we want next? What would be fun to paddle, or what would be a good, you know, also we all have kids, we all have families. So, you know, looking at it from that perspective, what does somebody with a family want? Mm-hmm. As you said, it's an awesome tool to take with you on vacation. So, you know, it is great family paddling tool. So what works well for that? Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, it's just cause we're not trying to like, you know, we're not trying to sit around and design a product to sell. We're trying to design a product to paddle, and then it sells if it's fun to paddle.
So yeah,
you gotta start from that perspective.
And you mentioned this earlier, but you guys kind of, you know, you were three for three. People like the board, and you're like, let's do this thing. Let's create a business. And you know, that's a really great idea, but then there's so many things that come after that, like building a brand, running a social media account, you know, having PR and like making sure you're not saying stupid things on your own personal account. Like your whole lifestyle becomes that brand as that brand grows. And I've listened to you and actually participated with you on some cool little roundtable ideas with like inclusivity in Whitewater, like with Diversify Whitewater, for example. As you're building a brand and you're looking to, you know, set a great example in the outdoor industry, and run a fun social media account and bring in the right people, what has that experience been like for you? Like, has it been challenging or did it come naturally?
It's super challenging. But not like in a negative way at all. I mean, it's totally fun and rewarding. And we've had all kinds of missteps. Not so much with like, I wouldn't say, I mean, the sort of things we've done have been more business planning things, and also being new to a new industry and a new company in a new industry is like double hard, you know, because you're trying to kind of invent the market while you're inventing the product for the market, you know? So,
wow. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, that part's hard, and it continues to be. And right now COVID's done all kinds of crazy things, as everyone knows, to the world. And we've had lots of impacts from that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as like, building the brand, I think was probably the part that came the most naturally because we just authentically love it. And then we brought other people in that loved it, you know? So like Brittany's been a huge part of building our brand because she does all of our social media, mm-hmm. but I don't ever, I don't, my, like, my management style with Brittany is to call her up and see if she wants to go paddling. I mean, I don't right. I'll tell her to do anything ever because she just gets it. You know, she's just part of the family. And right. so she just gets it. And so that, you know, I think we've been lucky in that way that we've just been had good people with us and people that love it and want to be a part of it. And so that part's been cool. And this, and yeah, you mentioned diversify whitewater. I mean, what my greatest hope for the next phase of this for me would be to just get more people into it that, you know, aren't as privileged, you know? And so with Salida, what I see, Salida is a working town still. I mean, we're changing very quickly and there's expensive real estate here and, you know, all that sort of classic mountain town problems.
Right.
But we also have a lot of kids that, you know, never became whitewater kayakers before. And well, why didn't they, you know? And well, the reason is because the barrier to entry is quite high, you know?
Right.
I mean, one is there's a knowledge barrier to entry. So, you know, if the whole concept of how do you even do it is kind of intimidating,
yes.
you know? And then there's lots and lots of gear that's expensive to buy, you know? And so one of the products that I love that we make is we make a $99 bodyboard, you know? And it's just a boogie board, you know? And so a kid could get like a $30 or $50 life jacket in this boogie board. And now they're in the river and they're learning all kinds of stuff. You know, they're catching eddies and they're surfing and they're learning how to swim in the river and they're having a great time. And it's pretty approachable. And honestly, if a kid came in here and didn't have 99 bucks, I'd be more than happy to give him a bodyboard. You know, it's like,
right.
I love the fact that that's like this thing that a kid can have that and their life jacket and that's it.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, if you extrapolate that into reaching more communities, like what Diversify Whitewater is trying to do. And we certainly just, you know, we don't know how to do it, but we know to partner with the people that do. And, you know, and so, I mean, yeah, is it the right thing to do? It is, I think, because I think these activities can have profound impacts on people's lives. I mean, I know firsthand that they can,
right.
But it's also like you're not a smart business person if you're not thinking of how to grow your market. And so, you know, I mean, there's plenty of white dudes interested in outdoor recreation. So like who else is out there, you know?
Right.
I don't have to try super hard to market to my own demographic, you know?
Right.
So who else is out there, you know? And in order for those folks to feel welcome, then they have to feel welcome. They have to believe that it's a space and an activity that they can do safely and comfortably. And when I mean safely, I don't mean just physically safely, but that they feel comfortable and, you know, and in a space that's comforting to, or comfortable for them. And so, you know, I just hope we can help with that somehow, or at least, you know, arm the right people with the tools they need to do it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say that before and it really like hit my heart when you say something along the lines of, I might not have the knowledge or skills to do it, but I know that I can partner with the right people, which is such everybody. It's like a servant mindset, which is huge. And being able to take a step back and say, I don't need to be the guy standing in the spotlight, handing out paddleboards to people. I'm going to give these to the people and enable this to happen. And, you know, build the community from the background and talk to the right people. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. You got to be smart enough to know what you don't know how to do. Like that's one of the most important things I've learned is like, yeah, I mean, I'm only really good at a few things. And so I've got to go find other people that are smarter and better than I am.
Yeah. Genius. You're a dad and you're a husband. How has having a family, and you said you kind of got started a little bit younger in today's standards. How is being a father and being a husband? You guys have been married, I think I saw on your Instagram, like 20, 25 plus years.
Yeah, we've been together for 26 and married for 22, something like that. Yeah.
How has being a parent and being a husband and growing in that paradigm helped you as a businessman and I guess just as a person in general?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the most important thing to me, obviously. Mm-hmm. My kids, are just amazing. And I mean, I know everybody says that, you know, okay. Parents is like, you know, My kids are 19 and 17 now, and they're just cool people that I love hanging out with. They're my best paddling friends now. And I feel so lucky that they fortunately enjoy these activities that I love too, because I didn't feel like I could force them into it, but I did, of course, set the table and offer them the opportunity, and then invested the time and the effort, because it's a lot of time and effort when you're, I mean, any parent that's taught a kid to do anything and really taught them to do it, you know, you really just take your own activity and your own desires to do these things just takes a major backseat, you know, and you're just like, but what you get in the reward is that you get to re-experience all this stuff through them. And it's so cool. I mean, right about, if you were ever going to try to become jaded about an activity, well, this is boring. Well, try teaching a kid to do it. And then all of a sudden, like, now you gotta see it through their eyes, and it's not boring to them. In fact, it's terrifying, you know? And so, I mean, I just love that piece of it. I love that I get to celebrate these things with the people that I love the most. You know, and my wife is, amazing. She's my best friend, and she's kept me, she holds me to a very high standard, which I appreciate, much like the teacher I talked about earlier.
Yes.
You know, I like to meet high expectations, and my wife demands it. And, I appreciate that, you know, I appreciate that. I feel very, very lucky. And my son is just about to, he actually sort of has left the house already. He just is coming home tomorrow, actually, from a big road trip. His first big kind of solo road trip, went all over the West paddling and surfing. And he's, I can tell he's itching, like he's ready to go. So, it's crazy. You know, it's almost two decades, and I'm about to turn this kid loose on the world. It's going to be fun.
Amazing. So cool. Yeah. There's a few things more character building than a big road trip like that. So I'm sure you're excited to sit down and have dinner and talk about it.
I'm excited for him. Yeah.
So let's say you're looking to the future now, for Badfish, and you've got all the resources in the world. Money is not an issue. What is your guys' moonshot? Where would you take this if resources were not an issue?
Oh man.
The ideal situation.
Well, like from a product standpoint, you know, I think I think river surfing is getting bigger and bigger, and more people are going to be interested in it. It's gonna, you know, I just went out to Washington actually last week and surfed this wave. It's an artificial wave in a swimming pool, you know, basically, right?
I saw your videos. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's called a city wave. It's a standing wave. It's European technology, but it's in a pool. You know, it's a water park. The wave's incredible. I mean, it's the best river wave I've ever surfed. Yeah. You know, and so I think there's a lot more. But river surfing is also highly specialized. So, like for example, the boards that we surfed in Washington would not work at all in Salida. You know, so it's a little bit of a weird thing, because it's hard to make a product in river surfing that's going to work for a ton of people the way you can make a paddleboard that'll work for a ton of people. Mm-hmm. So what I would like to do is I'd like to make, you know, more accessible river surfing boards that maybe aren't the board that the high end experts can end up in when they're on this one exact wave. Like they surf Brennan's in Missoula, or they surf Bend in Bend, Oregon. They're going to end up with a board that's like that rocket ship for that special particular wave. But I would like to make everyone's first or second river surfboard, you know?
But
you need a wide spread to be able to do it. So it's a business challenge, because you don't want to make 10 products that all do sort of the same thing, because it creates a lot of confusion and people don't know what to buy, and you got to answer a lot of questions, and then invariably one sort of loses out. But ultimately that's kind of what you need. You need a bunch of different boards for that sport. So, I think that would be fun to do. And then just be able to give back more, you know, and be able to contribute more to the growth, and leave something behind, besides just, you know, boards and that sort of thing. But like, just, you know, be able to contribute more to getting more people access to it. You know, having more communities, have this sort of positive interaction with the rivers. And so, you know, I think anybody that, right, that grew up in the outdoor industry kind of, you know, if they start a brand, kind of wants to be Yvon Chouinard in Patagonia, right, you know, and live that model a little bit. You know, in fact, we have a Let My People Go Surf Day here at the Fish. So, you know, our employee goes and goes kayaking, you know, it's like, get out of here, man. You know, right, and that's that, you know, that was the title of Yvon Chouinard's book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I just keep having fun too. And it's gotta be fun.
Cool. We're getting to the end of our hour here. So I think we should head right on into our final five questions. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready. Do it.
Cool. Ask these at the end of every podcast. The first one is pretty easy. Where can we find you guys on social media? And is there anything else that you'd like to plug or bring awareness to?
Yeah, you can just, Badfish is easy to find. Badfish SUP pretty much everywhere. Cool. I don't know why you'd want to follow me on Instagram, but you can if you want.
To see the face scars after kayak beaters.
I wouldn't say I'm the most interesting social media influencer, but I'm out there too. Cool. I'll bring awareness to my son is working on a video series with his buddy. It's called Miles Away. And so if you check out at Miles Away series on Instagram, follow them there, and then they're going to start producing some YouTube shows here soon. And so you can check out Miles. My son's name is Miles. And so you can check out Miles Away. But otherwise, like I said, unless you just want to see pictures of my kids and the occasional unimpressive photo of me doing something not that impressive, then you can check out my Instagram.
Cool. I'll tag those in the show notes too, especially Miles Away, because that sounds like something I'm definitely interested in, and I'm sure people listening will be as well.
Cool.
Number two, what is your favorite outdoor activity and why?
I mean, it's whitewater kayaking for sure. But since we've already talked about that a ton, I'll just talk a little bit about bouldering and rock climbing, because I do love that as well, and I have a passion for it. And in particular, I love the, in rock climbing, I love the movement, you know? And so, just unlocking something, solving the puzzle, and I mostly boulder, really. I don't climb with ropes very much anymore. Yeah. You know, I love the simplicity of it. I love the little bit of fear that you get, you know,
right,
like a responsible amount of fear.
Yeah.
But nonetheless. And, so, I mean, I think, it, you know, besides whitewater paddling and paddling, bouldering is kind of my favorite activity.
Yeah. You got a really good point. Intentional motion. It's something that I have to like think to be intentional. I'm just kind of like a loose cannon sometimes, but that settles my mind down, and the, what do you call it? Responsible amount of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good for you too.
Well, as you get older too, like, you know, like understanding that the way that you sit or the way you walk or the way you move has consequences on how you feel. So like, I love that climbing, you know, you have to really, well, what if I just turn my foot just a tiny bit out, or what if I shift my weight this way, and how it changes things. And I think it translates into just life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Question number three, where is your favorite place that you've ever been to outdoors? I know that's a tricky question, but.
Oh man. Holy mackerel.
I could almost revise that and say, what is your favorite outdoor space that feels most like home? Like someone that you always go back to.
Yeah. So I would say it's Ender Rock on the Numbers, which is a section of whitewater north of Buena Vista, Colorado. So just, you know, about 30 miles up the valley from where I live. There's a spot called Ender Rock, and Ender's an old school kayak move, right, where you stick your nose into a pour over and put your boat up vertically. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful deep eddy with this big granite pointy boulder. I used to just be so psycho about doing tricks at this place that I would like get done rafting and sleep right next to it. And so I could get up in the morning and like paddle there before I went to work and then come back at night. And it's just like, you know, like you said, home, right? When I paddle into that eddy now, I mean, even if I don't mess around with the pour over or whatever, or it's too low or it's too high or whatever, I'm like, oh, this is my spot. You know, I know that boulder's right there and that one's over there. And I remember we're sleeping over there and, you know,
Right. Yeah,
that's my spot for sure.
Amazing. Yeah. Question number four, what is something that you see today as a blessing that in the moment you might've saw it as a mistake?
Oh, that's like most of my life right there.
Yeah. When you said earlier, you said something along the lines of you learn best by making the mistake and then correcting it. I was like, oh, yeah. I probably have a good answer for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and honestly, the biggest thing I've learned is like not to freak out because I mean, I did used to freak out a little bit, you know, and especially building a white water pool, I'll just tell this story because this one probably fits that. But I built this drop in Buena Vista, Colorado, in 2004. And I was really experimenting at the time, trying to change the way that the whitewater features came out. And I built this drop. And when the water was low, it looked pretty good. I thought it was going to be pretty good. But the minute the water came up just a little bit, like my spidey sense was like, oh no,
right.
Like this is going to be a massive ledge hole. Like this is going to be dangerous. You know, and that's your worst fear as a whitewater park designer. Like if I blow a feature and people aren't happy because it's not dynamic enough, oh, well, no one's going to drown, right? Like some elite recreationalists are unhappy with me. I can live with that.
Right.
If I blow a feature and it might drown somebody, I can't live with that.
Right.
You know? And so I built this hole, water came up. It was like, oh man, I know this is going to be bad. And you're sort of like, well, how much should I freak out about this? Like, should I tell the town to close it? Should I, you know, and you don't really know. And so the water came up more to like a higher flow. And I went down there, and this is the way karma works, but I went down there, and the minute I got down to it, this guy's coming down in a cataract fishing by himself. And it's a new feature, right? It hadn't been there before. So he's sort of like clearly looking like he doesn't know where he's going. He's like, you know, being indecisive above it. And I'm like, dude, straighten out, go punch. You know, I'm like, punch the hole. And he goes in and just stops dead. And boom, he comes out of the boat instantly swimming. Another friend of mine happened to be down there kayaking. He got the guy over with a throw bag, but his boat was stuck in this hole, just surfing this hole. And it's a full cataract in there surfing the hole. And I'm like, oh man, all right. I was in street clothes, but I had my paddling gear in my car, and my friend was there, and I was like, dude, we got to get this boat out for him. And it was literally in there. I had enough time to go to my car, like quickly change, put on a PFD helmet, run back down. And I literally had my buddy clipped my life jacket. I swam out there with a rope, clipped the rope to the boat, you know, and then pulled the boat out. But I mean, this all took like 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, the whole time the boat's just getting worked, and I'm like, oh my God, like somebody is going to get really badly injured or something.
That's
in here.
Scary.
Yeah. And so right away I was like, okay, well now I know how much to freak out. You know, I'm like, right. I gotta like, so I, you know, I had to go to the town. It was embarrassing. You know, I had to go to the town and be like, look guys, I think this is dangerous and we just got to address this. And it was a lesson to be humble and be like, look, I made a mistake here and we're going to fix it, but we can't fix it right now. And right now we got high water and we got to make sure people don't get hurt in here. And so I look back on that and I'm like, yeah, I mean, all those things are blessings because you do learn, you don't really learn when things are awesome.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, this is awesome. It'll probably be awesome tomorrow. And it's like, well, it's rarely awesome twice, you know? So, I mean, I think that was a good one.
Yeah, that's an excellent, humbling story. Thank you for sharing that. Sure. That's amazing. Before we go to question number 5, Mike, I just want to take a second to acknowledge you for chasing down and being an example in a new industry and going out there. And you took a chance as a kid. You went out there and found your passion and you found your crew and your people and fell in love with something. And here you are, you know, you said 30 years later, still doing the same thing, talking to the same people, but as someone who has a voice and someone who can, mentor in and be what other people have been to you into this wonderful world of running rivers. So thank you for all that you do.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. All right. Final question. You ready?
Yep.
All right. When it's all said and done, when you are dead and gone and we're sitting around the campfire, all we have left to talk about is your legacy. What do you hope we're talking about?
Well, I hope people aren't just talking about me. I hope they're talking about some paddling that they did that maybe I helped facilitate, or maybe, you know, they're stoked because they went river surfing, or maybe in the next phase of my life, I'll be able to, spend more time, you know, getting more kids into paddling, which is something I really do want to do. I got to do a little bit when I was younger, but I'd like to do it again when I'm older and have the time. and or maybe they're talking about a whitewater park, and maybe I just faded into the background, you know, like I just, right. Yeah, my ashes already went down through the whitewater park and through Pine Creek. And it's like, I don't need them to be talking about me. I just hope, you know, that I can, it would make me feel good to know that I could contribute a little bit to, other people finding the joy that, you know, and all the love and the family and all the stuff that I've gotten from these activities, and continue to, you know, make me feel good to know that I could contribute to someone else on that path.
Fantastic answer. Mike Harvey, thank you for being a part of Camping Out. It was such an honor to sit here and talk to you tonight, and I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Dan. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk later. Have a good one.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
And that is that for this episode of Camping Out with Mike Harvey. Mike was such a fantastic dude to speak with. It is really incredible to see somebody take on their passion, mix it up with their work, and end up doing it for years and years, especially in the world of outdoor recreation, where those opportunities can be fairly rare. Now, if you enjoyed this conversation, make sure you're subscribed to Camping Out wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're feeling froggy, maybe even leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to hear more from Mike, check out the Eddie Out podcast hosted by my friend Natalie Zollinger. Her and Brittany Parker are both athletes that ride for Badfish, and they have a really fun, intimate conversation with Mike that spurred on me even reaching out to Mike in the first place. So check that one out. As we get to the end of our time here, I just want to say thank you for sitting around the campfire with us again tonight. And just as a reminder, adventure comes to those who go.